Blog Talk Radio. welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. www. Oh my God, Lee!
Just cleaned that table,
Lee. I just cleaned that table.
Fuck. Sounds about
Jesus.
Right.
The live studio audience did not like that one bit. www.thematthewaronshow.com. I am Matthew Aaron at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook. You know what I found funny?
What's that?
You know, I say always Matthew Aaron on Facebook.
Correct.
You can't search me.
No, you can't.
I'm uber private.
You're very private.
So I like that I say that as if you could add me. But unless you know me through people, you cannot even add me.
Oh, you know. That's how it is.
So,
got to be tricky.
Yeah. So what? I'm sitting next to...
Lee Capreas, hello. Oh, come on.
Oh, they are just brutal. No, come on, studio audience. Don't you like Lee? Oh. Jesus. Oh, my God.
What is that even?
And sitting next to Lee Capreas is...
Hello, everybody. Steve Weirich here.
Well, thank you. I love you all. You're great. Cut it.
They're laughing at him.
No, they're applauding.
Okay. Well, here we are. How was the weekend? What are you doing?
The weekend.
You're introducing me to people while I'm doing a show.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The weekend was about this moment that we just had. That kind of sums up the weekend.
By the way,
yes,
this weekend was the last weekend of Entourage.
That it was.
So let's talk about the final ep.
Should we?
I think we should.
Okay.
No drama. He's on my to-do list right after inserting needles in my cock.
Yeah, I think we should have a little talk about the final ep. Don't you think so?
No.
Alex? Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I guess he hasn't.
Oh, well, here's what happened.
Yeah, let me know
I'm going to run through it. You better go hide or something.
Give me the rundown.
I'm giving you a 5-second warning at least.
4, 3, 2.
Okay, the final episode of Entourage. Here's basically what happened.
Yes.
As I predicted, everything's a happy ending.
Right.
And there's a little clip after the credits, of course, that sets up the film.
Right.
Which I'm sure will be just as bad as this season was.
Oh. Well, I'll take your word for it.
Show's no good anymore.
Yeah.
It went out about a year or two late.
Well,
maybe
you know,
a year and a half.
These shows are becoming like
maybe
lemons.
2 years.
They got to squeeze all the juice they can out of these shows.
Yeah.
So that was that on the Entourage front. Do you want to know any more? I can give you specifics if you'd like.
Anything else happen this weekend?
Did we do anything? We did do a little filming.
We filmed, that's right.
We did do a little filming. I heard it went really well.
That's what you heard.
So, yeah, no, I'm the one that heard it. You guys saw it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Correct.
That's it. Oh, God. It's one guy in the studio audience. He was dying.
He
loved it.
He was.
He loved it.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, that's true.
No, I heard it did go really well.
It did.
I heard it went really well, yeah.
And it's in post-production at the moment, and it's...
It's for 4 shows in October.
Right.
And we're going to have, like, video...
It's a production.
I don't even know what to compare it to. I mean, I guess it's kind of a clip show with new material.
Yes, absolutely. A clip show with new material.
Yeah, so that happened.
Yes.
What else is going on in the life and times? Am I wrong, though? Entourage, no good no more, right?
You are, in my opinion, yes.
You think it jumped the shark?
Yeah, a while ago. Completely...
some shows fizzle out, some jump the shark.
Look, this was a show that just, I don't know how much reality was in it anymore.
Yeah.
It was getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
And last season, with the Sasha Grey and the porn and drugs, just bad.
Yeah.
Bad. What else has happened?
Oh, a lot. A lot of different things. This week, stacked. You got to co-ed the stack.
Oh! Tomorrow's show is canceled.
Yes.
I am going to a studio screening of Straw Dogs tomorrow night.
Excellent.
Rod Lurie.
Get excited for that.
Maybe I'll say hi to Kate Bosworth for you, Luisi.
Oh, God.
Tell her you said hi. I don't know.
How are you getting in, Luisi?
I'm pretty sure I'm sitting next to Dick Roper and Michael Phillips.
You will be. Absolutely.
So I hope they don't mind me grabbing their popcorn. Should be fun.
As long as you don't grab them.
No, so I gave Tobias two options. I go, well, you can reschedule the show tomorrow, or you can have Steve host it. And
he's
goes,
like,
I'm
we'll reschedule.
That's exactly what he said. It's okay.
That's what happened. I actually, when I asked Pat,
yeah,
I asked Pat, what's wrong with Steve hosting?
He said,
well, what happened was, I go, Steve can co-host, and I'll call from the car.
Right.
And I'll be on the show. I just won't be hosting the show. I'll call, and I'll say, hey, how you doing? And I'll talk to Lee Rumor, and then I'll get off the phone, and it's your guy's show from
there.
Yeah,
and on the show, we'll hear Richard Roper telling you to shush in your
seat
during the movie. This will be during the movie.
Yeah, well,
being
But I was told, hey, I'll just do the Lee Rumor interview, and you and Steve, it would be Lee and Steve, could have your own show tomorrow. And basically, I was told.
You were.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, that's not happening.
Matthew Aaron Show hosted by Lee and Steve.
I love it.
That's audience, not happening.
Who would the audience be getting the worst of it from?
Wait, what did you say?
I said the Matthew Aaron Show hosted by Lee and Steve.
Oh, my God. Look,
that's what my dicks say. How did you know?
No one's enjoying that.
Well,
I want to have a show to come back to. Pat says it's nothing against you.
No, of course not.
By the way, Pat, why don't you call in and explain yourself in this situation?
Yeah.
Because Steve was ready to Joan Rivers it up here.
Well, you know, it's a backhanded compliment.
It's Italian Day. You're canceling Italian Wednesday.
Way to cancel.
Desgraziado.
I don't know what that was.
Well,
in either case, I always have something to do. I have a plan B.
By the way, I'll let you all know tomorrow how the movie premiere.
Let us all know.
Yeah. I'll let you all know.
A remake of a Peckinpah movie. It's got Dustin Hoffman. I don't know. Don't know about that.
Rod Lurie's a friend. I'm sure
it's
good.
Okay.
I'm sure it's good.
And Dustin Hoffman.
Look, the guy was a critic before he was a director. I think if anyone knows the perils of doing a remake, it's a Rod Lurie. I don't think he'd be doing it unless he thought he can do it justice. It's obviously not a cash grab.
No.
The movie wasn't a hit to begin with.
No, it's true.
And so obviously he thinks he can do something with it that I guess Peckinpah. I don't know. I'm gonna talk to Rod on Thursday afternoon. I'm going to tape it and put it on the show Thursday night.
Right.
And I'm going to ask Rod.
I'm okay with remakes if it's a movie that could have been improved on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask Rod why he wanted to remake it, because I know as a critic, he's probably most of the time against it. So
from the trailer, Alexander Skarsgård looks fairly well cast.
Did you watch the Tea Party debate last night, Lee?
I didn't actually, no.
Steve, Tea
drunk.
Party debate?
I was drunk.
I was busy. No, I was
Are you in
cutting.
The Tea Party still?
I am, no, I'm not. No,
you were
not,
never in?
Never was. Actually, I was working with you last night. Why would you ask me that? I was with you last night.
Oh, that's right.
I was sitting right
Well,
next
I was trying to set up a visual for the audience.
Oh,
that was really good.
Well, you know.
Wait, choke on that.
Oh, yes.
Thanks, pal.
Yeah, that's nice. Oh,
thanks, pal.
So last night we were working.
We were working.
I don't know what. I feel so unexcited.
We worked all weekend.
We did. I'm not very entertained.
Yeah, we were just working all weekend.
Everybody's working.
Aren't we lucky?
Don't boo that. Yeah. Aren't we lucky is right.
Yeah, that should have gotten booed.
Yeah.
So you didn't. Did you watch it? Did you watch the insane people bicker with each other?
I didn't even know it happened, to be honest.
Oh, who knows? I don't know. What's going on with my sound, though?
Front runners are what? Mitt Romney, Michelle Bachmann, and Rick Perry?
I have no idea what's going on.
I don't know what I am with my sound.
I have no idea. What, are we not on?
No, we're on.
Oh.
but my tube's not working.
Oh, your tube? Ooh, that's no good.
You're not funny and nobody likes
you. Oh, it's working.
There it is.
It's working.
Okay.
Lee, your clip's ready. It's working. It's good, actually. I'm sorry about that. So we were working all weekend, right?
Yes.
Anything else going on?
Yes,
I was working, unlike some people that go to barbecues with Megan. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Lee, you're unbiased. Let me give you a scenario here. You tell your friends that you're going to try to make it out. You're going to try to come to dinner. You're
going
to try to have a good time with your buds, your pals, your compadres.
Dump that bitch.
The
go
people
on.
The people you're moving to Los Angeles with in, what is it? Oh, I don't know, a month and a half.
Yep.
Lee, would you say it's a cool move to give your girlfriend your phone and let her text the friend that, don't bother us anymore, pretty much. We're busy tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, I didn't think the underwear thing could...
That was Luisi. Luisi gave his phone to his girlfriend and said, tell my friend to buzz off.
Wow. You tell him, studio
so
audience.
So what did you think of that, Lee?
That's, why?
Is that low, though?
Yeah, but, like, let me gain some insight. Why was that? Why did that happen?
I don't know. I asked him numerous times. He never gave me an answer. First, he tried denying it. He said there was no such text. He had to go back and find it. And then he realized, oh, wait, it did happen. Like, he forgot.
Oh, boy.
It slipped his mind.
Not
a good move, though, right?
Yeah.
You don't do that to a friend.
Yeah, your ethics are in question. Again.
Matt is jealous of Megan.
That's good. I like that.
The studio audience.
The studio audience,
that.
Yeah. That makes me inclined to say some shit. Jesus. Like, you got to dump that zero, get yourself a hero. Some
I don't know.
Shit like
I just feel like, how can a friend do this to another friend?
I couldn't tell you.
You told me you were going, and then what?
I told you I was going.
Yeah? And you never came.
No.
And you said you were going to leave to go have drinks.
I didn't want
to
drink.
He didn't
want to
drink.
Oh, bullshit.
He's such an upstanding character.
What'd you do Saturday night? Oh, wait. You went to the club, spent
$900
on booze, and drank and drive.
Oh. Yeah.
We are aghast at drinking and driving.
Yeah, it's true.
What kind of human being are you?
How much did you spend on booze?
$900.
Jesus.
Yeah, you know what? Any idiot that's dumb enough to pay $900 for two bottles of booze at a club.
He got two shots of Cristal, and they left.
Oh, Jesus. Well, really, I mean, it's not nearly what my Saturday night was. I mean, you know, was that Fry's Electronics and Portillo's. And bye-bye, baby.
Portillo's doesn't make for a bad evening.
Also, I dropped seven bills at Portillo's.
Well, we'll save our bye-bye, baby story for Peter Tolan.
Oh, I forgot.
On Thursday.
I forgot. My
Thursday, mind. So we're going to open the show probably with the Rod Lurie interview and then go into P.D. Tolan.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so I'm excited about the Straw Dogs tomorrow, though.
Yeah, I'm glad you're going. I'm glad
I go to these industry events.
You know what I am? I'm basically the, I'm the threat. You know, like if Matt doesn't go to these events, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put Steve in as the host. And
that's going to be my new threat?
Yeah, that should be your new threat.
Oh, that's good.
It worked.
Yeah, right.
It worked.
I wish Caesar was here. I wish he'd call in, too, because I'd like to know why he was posting Whitney Houston videos on his Facebook
today. That
is
very peculiar. I mean, because I know you've been a Whitney fan for as long as I've known you.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
What? That's kind of weird.
What was that music that you played that got booed?
It was Whitney
Houston. Oh, it was How Will I Know by Whitney Houston.
Okay.
That was the music.
Oh,
that
hardcore 80s music, man. I can't hear that stuff.
Caesar says I should bring Steve because I have two tickets. No. I don't think so, Caesar. Don't worry about who I'm bringing.
Were they just relying a little too much on the synthesizer in the 80s? Like, lay off the synthesizer.
I like the synthesizer,
though. Does that just
not
conjure up images of pink spandex with incurable venereal disease rubbed on it? Come on!
This crowd's a synthesizer-loving crowd.
Yeah.
This is a synth-loving crowd, pal.
They do like the synth rock.
I have nothing to do with that. I feel really bad
so
for you there.
So there's no wit on the show anymore. It's the soundboard's getting all the... Okay.
Yeah,
all
right, there's no wit anymore. No. We are basically an hour and a half of soundboard, 30 minutes interviews.
Yeah.
That's what we are now.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Caesar says he played Whitney because someone was jamming out to it at work.
Ooh, all right.
Never really heard the term jamming in Whitney in the same
Does
sentence.
Does he work in a food court or an elevator?
Oh.
He works at Panda Express.
Oh,
Schaumburg Mall. You didn't know that?
Oh.
A&W.
Oh, A&W.
Yeah,
no.
He graduated from Sparrow a long time
ago.
That's why he's looking for a job in L.A. so bad. He knows there's no A&Ws out there.
Well, even the sandwich shop I work at, we do Sports Center. Da-na-na, da-na-na, da-na-na.
Oh,
I bet you got half of those clips from Married with Children. Those were the most wild audience reactions on television.
What clips? We have a live studio audience.
Oh,
right. And they absolutely are really into the show tonight, which is just great.
Yeah,
and I'm happy to have them here.
Yes. Thank you to our page, Nick Spees, for getting them all organized.
Our page, Nick Spees.
It's like cartoon where Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny are on stage and everyone's laughing at Bugs Bunny. And
that ticket tomorrow is going to someone else.
A woman, I hope. Take a date.
Well, you know.
Take a lady friend.
It is a studio thing.
I was told you're not
supposed
to do
that, right?
You got
two tickets?
I may have been told I have an and one.
Okay. A plus one?
But look. Does Michael Phillips take an and one of these things? Does Dick Roper take an and one of these things?
I have no idea. He goes
all the time. He can't really take his wife.
Well, he doesn't have a wife.
I don't know the etiquette on this. I just figured that'd be a great lay. Automatic lay. Yeah, shocking. Well, you know, if anyone in the room here has been experienced that, let me know. But I think it's an automatic lay to get to go to a screening like that.
No, you'd be surprised.
What?
You'd be very surprised.
What the hell? A dinner at McDonald's and an automatic screening. Come on.
I will not get laid for that.
Wow. Well, then you know what? Take a good friend. Take one of your closest friends.
Is Luisi talking
Yeah, you're going to have to make a phone call. I don't know. You're looking around here.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to take Luisi to this studio.
If you could take someone in this room, who would you take?
I'll tell you why I can't take Luisi.
Oh, well, why?
What are you, a dumbass?
And, you know, Lee.
Butt wipe.
Steve.
Ass wipe.
So, I mean, it's one of those situations. I may take new guy.
You could.
Yeah.
I'll take new guy.
New guy.
He seems harmless. Noah?
You'd rather take
Noah? I'll take Noah. He seems harmless.
Wow.
Yeah.
You mean you don't want to take Len or Terzo?
I may call Terzo to do it.
Well, there you go.
I may call Terzo.
You have a Rolodex
of
people.
If I don't bring a woman, I'm going to call Terzo.
Beautiful. Although, if you're telling me you're not going to get laid from taking a woman, I don't know you want to waste that.
Caesar says my date's going to be Lenny.
Oh,
yeah.
Well. He knows that at the time.
Put a wig on.
No, I think Lenny's in class during it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call Terzo.
Good move.
Yeah, he's a loyal guy.
He is.
Always there.
And you know what?
Never has his woman friends text me.
Terzo's missed a few movie invites, so here's the colossal movie invite.
He hasn't had any of his woman friends text you, huh?
Who?
Terzo?
Yeah.
Terzo? No, never.
Well, that's a friend.
Never. Some people are classy.
I just think it's a good move to invite Mike Terzo to make up for all the times he's been kind of overlooked on the movie invite.
Yeah.
Good move on your part.
Why is my dog's going nuts?
Well, more importantly...
By the way, I still haven't introduced our guest for tonight,
Larry Doyle.
And I feel like a jagoff because he's one of my favorites. I need to talk to him about a few things.
Yes.
One being Beavis and Butthead.
Yes.
Which we've heard a little bit of here.
What are you, a dumbass?
Another being The Simpsons, which we've also heard a little bit of here. I actually am a big fan of the movie I Love You, Beth Cooper. And I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Duplex. I want to talk about Looney Tunes. And I want to talk about a spec script he wrote back in... 97, I think.
Okay, I thought it was 98. I thought it was November.
Rewrites were talking there.
Okay.
I'm talking originally.
Okay.
Shooting Stewart.
Yes.
Which I got to read. And I guess it was originally written for Mike Judge and Rick Linklater.
Rick Linklater.
Good old Rick. Yeah. So I'm interested in talking about that.
Yes. Some of his episodes of Beavis and Butthead are my favorites.
So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, well, what Beavis and Butthead do you like is?
The choking episode where
Butthead's choking on the couch.
It really illustrates how much of a dumbass Beavis is with that.
I agree.
Ah, thank you. You guys are great.
Oh, aren't they great?
Yeah.
Aren't they
great? They are great. You know what? We need to take...
See.
Wow, they're going nuts.
Is there anything we could get them to go like, oh, like the girls just said something cute? Oh, that's the Married with Children. Yeah, there you go.
You want the? Hey, you asked them.
You people produce whatever reaction I can conjure up, huh?
Yeah, yeah, we're covered.
Oh, in the driving episode where they learn to drive.
That's one of my favorites.
I love that one. Where Butthead's making fun of Beavis in line when he's like, they're talking about bumper cars, and Butthead's like, even that little girl beat you in bumper cars, which was just cool.
Yes. By the by, he is one of the few writers I can think of from The Simpsons, not from Ivy League.
That's right.
Not Harvard.
He was not Harvard.
No, and I believe Larry, we'll find out in a few minutes. I believe Larry's from our neck of the woods.
Is he?
Yeah, I believe he's a Chicago guy. I may be wrong.
Wow.
Knock him. I'm feeling better now.
I hope so.
Two Emmy Awards.
Well, hey.
Yeah, won two primetime Emmys.
Nothing to sneeze at.
For two little shows called The Simpsons.
Wow. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
That Larry Doyle.
That's nice.
It is great. It's great.
I really liked I Love You, Beth Cooper, though.
What about it did you like?
I was very surprised how much I liked it. Put it that way.
All right. Put it that way.
His book was very good. I know he was adapting the book, but it's hard to take a 300-page book and turn it into a hour and 30-minute movie.
Yeah.
I was happy with it.
Excellent.
I liked it. He left the dirty stuff out.
Right.
To keep it PG-13. It's still pretty dirty. It's as dirty as PG-13 can get.
Right.
But
right.
I would like to dar, but you can't always get what you want.
No, but if you try sometimes, yeah, you might find you get what you need.
Yeah. Oh, do you like that song, Alex? Mm. Thanks for sharing.
No sound clip for that. Yeah.
What are you, a dumbass?
That sounds about right.
There you go. You happy?
I am very happy about that. Very. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, come on. Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, well, I don't want to get into that can of worms on the air.
Make him a bird.
I'm not even going to go there right now. Oh, Jesus.
Bathwipe.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Oh,
Luisi. Ay, ay, ay. There's some news that I need to get to after the interview. There's a lot of interesting things going on.
A lot going on, is there? Oh, tell us about the Anderson
I'll
Cooper.
I'll tease you with a little news, though. I'm going to get to Anderson in a minute. I'll tease you with some news, though.
Uh-huh.
Baby eels, man's penis, hospital.
Things you find in a... shit.
Yeah. We'll get to that story. We'll get to that story
that was,
at some
wait.
Point.
Okay.
I believe someone's calling in, though.
Hello,
you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Larry Doyle.
Hi, Larry. How you doing, pal?
Good.
Good. We were just talking about you, actually, and about some of your work. Steve and I... Introduce yourself, Steve.
Hi, Larry. This is Steve. How you doing?
That's a pretty complete introduction.
Isn't it?
This is Steve. He's like Madonna. He's one name.
Yeah.
One Prince, Madonna, Millie,
Steve,
Vanilli, whichever. So, Larry, I was going to ask you, first off the bat, how did you get involved with writing for television?
Some friends of mine got jobs writing for television, and then they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said yes.
That's what happened?
Wow.
They asked you if you wanted to do it, and you go, sure. Great.
Yeah, that's basically what happened.
You know, I heard you're from our neck of the woods, though, Larry, up in Illinois.
Yeah, I grew up in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, and I lived in Chicago for 10 years before I went to New York.
Did you enjoy that experience?
Growing up in Buffalo Grove, living in Chicago, going to New York.
Let's go with Buffalo Grove.
Everything in retrospect always seems better than it was. But I never found the suburbs to be that deadening, superficial thing that you always see on television. You know how it's portrayed. You sometimes see in movies where it's portrayed as this sort of false, in the era of perfectness. First of all, nothing was ever perfect in the suburbs. And second of all, and again, this might be the age as opposed to what it was like. You know, we went outside and ran around all day. Nobody stopped us, and we went wherever we wanted. And, there was hills and trees and streams, and it was fine. It was great.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit. People are addicted to their phones.
I used to run outside. That's when I was thin. Now, now not so much.
Well,
but,
people are too afraid of killing their kids these days.
Yeah.
In the old days, you just had more kids, so if you lost one or two,
wasn't a big deal.
Not as big of a deal.
You know what was weird? I was feeling really shitty about thinking that the other day, but I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
You have like five or six kids, if you lose one or two, is it the end of the world?
Yeah, you drop a litter with a couple of cushion kids.
I don't know. Ask Eric Clapton.
Don't attack Clapton on my show, pal. That's uncalled for. Right. By the way,
he got a very, very, very good song out of that.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
He did.
I doubt you'll get a Grammy out of that joke.
I did want to bring up, though, speaking of Buffalo Grove, that is, now, I read the novel for I Love You, Beth Cooper. That's based off of Buffalo Grove, right?
Well, it's set in Buffalo Grove, but not like any real Buffalo Grove. It's sort of like my memory of Buffalo Grove combined with the way it is today. You know, and I basically just made Buffalo Grove whatever it needed to be for the plot of the movie, but it was certainly easier, for example, to set something in Buffalo Grove High School where I knew where things were, so I could have the characters move around in a way and not have to make up an entire high school.
Yeah, I figure that's how everyone writes. They kind of like write, give it a real town name, and then it's kind of like America in that town. But I really enjoyed the book. The movie, I was afraid that you weren't going to be able to keep in all the funny bits, all the good bits. You kept in most of them. It's not as dirty as the book. There's some dirtier language and dirtier moments in the book. But was there any regrets with taking your own novel and then writing it yourself for screen? Was there anything you regretted leaving out or not doing?
It's a different animal. Movies are made by a bunch of people, and they depend on a lot of different things as to whether they're going to work or not. And I don't know. I mean, a decision was made early on, not by me, that it was going to be a PG-13 movie. And that forced a lot of decisions along the way, including decisions we had to make after shooting the movie that we thought was PG-13 and then was told by the people who give it the rating that it was not a PG-13 movie, which would have made it the lamest R-rated movie ever.
Yeah. It's really edgy for PG-13. It'd be really lame at R, right?
Well, I mean, it was all sorts of, and a lot of this stuff, well, this is America in a nutshell, a lot of it was just kind of, there's kind of this weird shame-based, you just have to go through the motions. Like, for example, when you see them drinking, they're drinking out of cups.
Yes.
And everybody knows what's in the cups. But it's important to say that it's cups.
I would hope everyone knows what's in the cup, or else they're not getting out often.
No, but you know what I mean? It makes a difference. If they weren't in cups, if they were bottles or cans of beer, it would have been rated R.
This is what happens with the MPAA. They're like, you can put it in a cup, but no bottle.
No.
And I hear you can't smoke now either, or else it's going to get a PG-13 or R rating
right away. Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of studios that won't let any smoking in any of their films, period. Warner Brothers is one of them, and Fox won't let anybody under the age of 21 smoke in a movie.
That's very intriguing, actually.
Yeah. Which is sort of interesting, because in the book and in earlier versions of the screenplay, and I don't know if we ever got to the shooting of it, the Beth Cooper smokes.
Yeah.
And it's used as an important thing for the main character of like a way in which she's not perfect, in a way in which he's like doing something bad as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
And
right.
And so it's not a positive role model thing. It's him thinking that that diminishes her in some way.
Right.
And we weren't allowed to do it because we just weren't allowed to do it.
Larry, I got a quick question for you. We're getting some feedback, I guess, with the phone. Do you have a landline or something to call from, maybe?
There is a landline. We're experiencing an apocalypse here on the East Coast. Let me call you. I'll call you back on the cell phone.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That'll work. Thanks, Larry.
Okay, bye.
I just don't want to lose that interview.
Right.
He says it's not going well over there on the East, though.
It sounds like a TV is on the fridge.
I love L.A.
Yes, I do as well.
I want to have a very nice conversation with Larry here. I'm trying to, like, pay attention to Larry.
You don't
and then
want...
listening to the static
Ooh.
At the same time.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
It's a shame,
yeah,
about,
it's
the,
rough.
Shame about the rating system with the smoke.
Well, this is what he said so far.
Give me the sense...
our listeners that were getting the static. We were talking about I Love You, Beth Cooper, which I really liked in the book to the film, and he was talking about how the smoking, they couldn't smoke and they couldn't drink out of bottles.
Right.
It had to be in a cup, a red cup, and everyone knows what's in the red cup, but yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Larry, are you back?
Yeah. Is this better?
Oh, that's perfect.
Fantastic.
That's perfect. I don't know
why. You won't believe this. This is an iPhone.
Oh,
no wonder.
It's beautiful.
And you can still hear me. No, it's everything here is completely messed up.
What's
are
going
we,
on?
We're not on broadcast, right?
No, we are. We are. What's going on over there?
We're live.
Oh, we are live.
I was going to use a word that you would normally use on broadcast.
You can say all you want.
Oh, please.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, we're it's pretty fucked up here. The where I live in Baltimore now, we had an earthquake a couple of weeks ago. Then we had this hurricane, which I don't think they've had a hurricane through here in 50 years. And then we had a tropical storm, and now, like, the phone lines don't work. And last week we were out without power for 7 days.
Okay.
Phone.
And you're in what, Maryland? Is that right?
Yeah.
Out in that,
yeah. Pretty far up, but, you know, we're not.
Yeah, that's interesting though. Larry Doyle's in Maryland. Why not L.A.? Why not New York, Larry? Why Maryland?
Well, I did live in New York for a while, and I lived in L.A. for a while. My wife is from Maryland, and she wanted to come back here, so we came back here.
Oh, that's a good reason. That's a good husband.
That's a perfectly fine,
what a good
understandable
husband.
Reason. Yeah.
But do you have to travel a lot for work related purposes then?
Yeah, I have to go to L.A. every once in a while. I'm going there next week. And I'm going to New York tomorrow. But, you know, mostly what I do is I write. And so I go and I sell my little thing. And then I come back here for 3 or 4 months and I write it. And then maybe I have to go back there. But if I were doing a TV show, I'd have to spend a lot more time back there. But I'm not really doing that kind of thing now.
Yeah, are you writing a novel at the moment, or are you doing a screenplay? What are you working on right now? Because I know you wrote your novel, Go Mutants, which did pretty well, and I know it got picked up, right, for film or what?
Yeah, Imagine bought it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what, if anything, they're doing with it. After Cowboys and Aliens, I think that, it's funny, Cowboys and Aliens is a genre mashup with Aliens, and Go Mutants is a genre mashup with Aliens. Yeah. It's different genres. So they might be kind of cool to that kind of idea now, but they have a screenplay, and they can do whatever they want with that. I just finished I have a book coming out in November, which is a collection of humor pieces.
What's it called?
Deliriously Happy.
Good. Well, that's good. That makes it sound like a humor piece, at least. Delirious.
Are those pieces?
And
are those pieces that you'd published previously, or did you write them for the book?
They're mostly published before in the New Yorker and Esquire, primarily.
Yeah, Larry's been in those little magazines, the New Yorker,
Harper's.
Yeah, like those little things. Yeah.
I just finished a screenplay, a spec screenplay, and so that's going out. And I'm actually pitching a television show next week.
Oh, very,
how that goes.
Very cool. Are you aiming network? Are you aiming cable, comedy? drama? I would assume comedy. You're a pretty funny guy.
Yeah, it's a comedy. Well, it's a comedy drama. It's a comedy. We're going to the networks next week. And,
Very cool.
I suppose if we don't land it there, we'll try the cable outlets. Or we might be doing it at the same time. I'm not really in charge of that, unfortunately.
Speaking of specs, though, Larry, I got to bring up, I read Shooting Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved it a lot. I thought it was great. Is that something you're hoping to get made? Because I think I'm sure it was timely back when you wrote it, but I think it's even more timely now. Is that something that you push, or do you even own the rights to it anymore, or what?
Well, I don't own the rights to it. I wrote that screenplay originally for Mike Judge way, way, way back, like 20 years ago. And there was an actor named David Sheridan who actually created that character.
Oh.
Stuart. And so we wrote it for him. And the problem with David Sheridan he might be still alive, so I don't really want to say anything too bad about him. He was an intense individual. And at some point, Miramax decided to pick it up and make it. And they were really into it, and they put David Sheridan into one of their scary movies.
Yeah.
Because they were really high on him. This is the kind of thing they do. What they do is they get really enthusiastic and they buy something and then they want to buy 8 more things from you.
Right.
And tie you down and stuff like that. And so they decided they were going to make this movie, David Sheridan, so they're going to put David Sheridan into all their movies. Hmm. And then they put David Sheridan in this movie and they started testing it, and the movie tested better and better the more they took Dave out. And so that sort of killed the project. You could probably make it without him because, you know, it's a,
yeah,
in a lot of ways, it's a kind of a stock character that anybody could do. But I have a feeling that given that Miramax, you know, is dead and blah, 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 I'm not even sure how you untangle the rights to that thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. And also, I don't think Mike Judge and the Weinsteins are on best terms after Extract, I don't think. I could be wrong.
Oh.
I would figure if I'm Mike Judge, this is just assumption, but if I'm Mike Judge and the way they release those movies that he does and give them no press or in the Idiocracy straight to DVD.
Right.
That was Fox. That wasn't.
Was that Fox? Okay.
I'm not even sure who did Extract. Was that Weinstein's?
Yeah, I'm pretty positive it was. Right.
You know what I think, though? I actually think Extract he did with I think that was sold after it was made to the Weinstein's, maybe?
Yeah.
Does that make sense that he had made it? He made it with independent money, and then he. Maybe boring to most people who are listening, but
no.
I think they only distributed it, and you know, I thought that was a great movie.
Yeah.
It obviously didn't do that great, but I'm not sure that Miramax, if it was even them, messed it up. It was just
it was sort of Miramax
difficult, but Mike had a bad experience, I'd say, on Idiocracy and even on Office Space.
Yeah.
With Fox, that they just didn't know what they had. In both cases, the initial theatrical release of those movies was dismal, and then, you know, later in DVD, it came back.
Yeah. Marketing and distribution, it's a few things.
Yeah.
But I agree.
All the movies I like the most.
But I think he was pretty happy with Extra, because I think that whoever distributed it, whether it was Miramax, whoever, wasn't
I just looked
involved in the movie until it was done.
Okay. So that makes
sense. So he got to make the movie that he wanted to make. You know, and I'm sure he would have liked it to have been more successful than it was. But he didn't have to deal with, you know, there were a lot of, you know, back and forth, especially on Office Space, from what I remember, that he would have rather not had to deal with. And I don't think he had to deal with that on Extract. That's at a, you know,
but
it should have been a better known movie. It's a good movie.
Well, speaking of Mike Judge, though, so, okay, you get asked by some friends to do Beavis and Butthead. Did you know Mike Judge before Beavis and Butthead, or just when you started working?
No, that's how I mean, a lot of times I said that to be glib, but the truth of the matter is what you do is, and this is the way all of these, every business works, I had worked with these two guys, Chris Marshall and Sam Johnson, who were writing partners, who went on to, they were like co-executive producers of Frasier, and I think now they're working on Cleveland show.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're very successful comedy writers. But anyway, this was their first television job, and I had worked with them on the National Lampoon. And so they, you know, said they were doing this thing and that I want to do it, and it was very early on in the, I'm not even sure any of them had even aired. And so it sounds like, you know, it's just lucking into something, but it was like I worked with these guys and they knew what I could or couldn't do. And so they asked if I could, you know, if I wanted to join this thing. And it wasn't at the time a very big deal to do it. And it certainly wasn't a lot of money. I think they paid like $500 for a script, which...
But do you take a lot of pride in your Beavis and Butthead work? Like, what experiences did you draw off from to write for that? As being brought on as a staff writer for that show, like, how did you go about getting into those characters and writing for that show?
Well, I was never a staff writer, although I did write, like, 10 or 11 of them. I wasn't working full-time. I was doing other things when I was doing them. They're just... dumb, you know, and what's great about them, I haven't seen the new ones, but what was great about the original ones was that they were just like the really dumbest teenagers you can possibly imagine, and so you had two things going for you comedy-wise. One was that they were teenage boys, and so you could tap into whatever you thought of when you were a teenage boy, and you could take the dumbest thing you had ever done as a teenage boy and assume that that would be the starting point for even dumber things they would do.
That's great.
Well, I love...
And so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and so a lot of things that I wrote about may have started as things that I had thought about doing, but even in my dumbest, teenagest, you know, moment didn't do and think, well, they would do that.
I got to give you credit. That I think it takes real intelligence to replicate stupidity. I think that's very difficult to do.
The show was really intelligent in general anyway, and I think it got credit for it at the time because there was a lot of satire around Beavis and Butthead,
right?
Where you'd see what they were watching or who they were dealing with,
or
and it clearly wasn't a show written by idiots.
Yeah,
you know. What my favorite thing, here's the thing, you explained it perfectly how you wrote that show, because when I go through my head of every episode you wrote, from like Choke to Liar Liar to the, what's the driving one,
Safe Driving. Yeah.
Like they all start with what would you think would be the worst possible thing happening and just getting worse.
Yeah.
So I think that summed it up perfectly, actually. And that's kind of like I Love You, Beth Cooper, too. It is one of those movies where it starts out with, like, the worst day ever would be you are on stage in front of all your peers in high school, and you announce that you love this girl. That's your worst day ever. And even
you say something really stupid, and you say something stupid about everybody. And it isn't just her. It's like you also then brag on everybody in the school.
Right, right. And that's your worst day ever. And then it just gets worse. And I guess that's kind of how Duplex was written, too. So I think we have a theme here for Larry Doyle's writing, then. Take the worst possible scenario and make it even worse.
Yeah, well.
More shitty it can get.
Which is good, though.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's a good way to do it. Yeah. That's comedy.
Even on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
It's a mad Marge.
Yes.
Stuff like that. It's like even worse. I love that, though. That's great. My life's not all that great, so I like seeing how much shittier it can get.
It can, yes. Explore your options of how shitty it can get.
And it can always get shittier.
What's the difference, Larry, though, between your version of Duplex and the movie?
Well, I mean, until they figure it out, you can go on the LarryDoyle.com and you can read the scripts of Duplex.
Yeah.
And watch the movie, and you can read the scripts of I Love You, Beth Cooper, and watch the movie, and also the Looney Tunes movie. So I'm trying to figure out which one of those. The script to I Love You, Beth Cooper probably is the closest to the movie that came out.
Yes, I thought so, too. Yes.
The Looney Tunes movie veers off of the script in important ways. You know, but you'd look at it and say, oh, well, 70% of what the script that he wrote is sort of in the movie. But in the ways in which it differs from the script and the ways in which it executes the things that are in the script that we wrote, it's very different. Duplex, they, you know, ultimately Danny DeVito threw out the script, and I don't know what he was doing, but we ended up trying to bring it back, but so much got thrown out that ultimately that movie didn't even make much sense by the time it was done.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you, because that movie, well, the original idea for the movie was based off of a real life thing with you and your wife moving into a duplex, right?
Well, that was sort of the inspiration, but also there was this, I remember there was a story, this woman in France, she was an elderly woman, and in France apparently you can buy the rights to move into someone's apartment.
Yeah.
And so this guy wanted her apartment, and you're not actually buying the physical apartment.
Okay.
You're just buying the right to move into the apartment. And he offered a certain amount of money. He said he would pay her a certain amount every month until she died, assuming that he got to move in after she died. And she was 90 years old, so whatever she was. And so it seemed like a good deal for him, good deal for her, because she's getting a little bit of money for nothing, really. And then she ended up outliving him. And she went to court because her agreement with him said that she had, you know, he gets the apartment upon her death, but there's nothing saying that he has to stop paying just because he died.
Yeah.
And so his estate had to continue paying her until she died.
Oh, my God.
And so that just made me think that that's where the inspiration for the basic setup of Duplex is these guys, this young couple, Ben Stiller and Drew Barrymore, buy this duplex apartment in Brooklyn, which seems like a steal at the price.
Yeah.
And the only caveat is that it's got two floors. In the second floor, there's an old lady who, the first time they see her, it's surprising that she doesn't die right then. you know, she's up there in a rent-controlled condition, and until she dies, she's going to be able to stay there. But they're thinking, like, we're buying this duplex for less than half of the cost of the thing, and once she dies it'll be like the most amazing thing we've ever gotten. And then not only does she not die, but she turns out to be the worst tenant imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, writing it was kind of about, it was a satire of the, you know, every time you talk about what a satire is about, it always sounds very dreary and awful, but it was about how people don't really respect old people anymore, and everybody believes that they are owed success.
Right,
right.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot on this show, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Tea Party is the prime example of that, where it's a bunch of angry white people who honestly believe that if it wasn't for black people and brown people, they'd all be millionaires.
Yeah,
right.
And they won't be because they're bone stupid, ignorant, you know, fuckheads. So they will never be rich. They will never have anything. And the only solace I have in the whole Tea Party movement is that if those guys manage to institute the policies they're trying to get instituted, it's going to kill a whole bunch of them.
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree.
Exactly.
They are the ones who are going to get screwed by the policies they're trying to institute.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
They really think that all the money's going to brown and black people, and it's going to them.
Right.
And so, when they cheer about the guy who, as they did in the last debate, who goes into the hospital and is in a coma because he's uninsured.
Yeah.
That is them. They were imagining an illegal Mexican dying in the hospital, and it's not. It's somebody who, you know, fucking got drunk and drove his truck into a tree.
Right.
That is going to be dying in the hospital because he's uninsured.
Right.
Yeah.
Some guy climbed a flagpole at Mardi Gras and fell on his noggin.
The other thing that doesn't bother me.
Or who is so goddamn fat that when he goes in to the doctor and the doctor says, well, you've got diabetes because you drank 10,000, you know, Coca-Colas in the last year and a half. But we're not going to treat you because you don't have health insurance.
Yeah.
Then, you know, he'll be sawing his own leg off. But, you know, talk for him.
It sounds like the episode of Beavis and Butthead where they borrow the dollar from each other to buy the candy. That's kind of what this is reminding me of.
Oh, I love circular discussion.
Well, you know.
But anyway, I can't remember what I was talking about before I started ranting.
Oh, back to the old lady croaking in duplex.
Oh, although they curriculum, so it was supposed to be kind of a satire about how you can go down this moral slide where they eventually decide that because she is causing them so much trouble, it is ethically okay for them to kill her.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't get any of that in the movie, but that was what I was trying to do, to show how you could go from being the sweet couple to deciding that, you know, this old lady kind of, to use a former governor of Utah's phrase, has a duty to die.
Yeah, and you know what's weird, too, is I meant to ask you, you got a co-producer credit. Okay, so even for people not in Hollywood, they would think that means Larry Doyle has some sort of power. So he could be on set, maybe, and be like, here's what the script is. I fucking wrote it. But that's not really how it is, Larry, because I heard a story, and tell me if this is true or not, that you were invited and then even uninvited to the premiere of the movie.
Not to the premiere, to the set.
Oh, to the set.
Oh.
You were invited and uninvited? Is that true?
Yeah. One of the producers, Ben So's producer, invited me to the set, and then Danny DeVito's producer called me back and said I wasn't welcome there.
So when you say Ben Stiller's producer and Danny DeVito's producer, can we assume that comes from Ben Stiller and Danny DeVito? Is that what you assume?
Oh, I guarantee you.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it is. No, Danny DeVito didn't want me on the set because he didn't want anybody on the set that anybody could talk to who would be an authority other than himself on what the movie was supposed to be. And I had developed the script for 2 years with Drew and Ben before he came aboard, and he just didn't like the idea that, you know, I was the old girlfriend he didn't want around.
So why come on to a movie if you're Danny DeVito that you want to change? I don't understand that. You get the script and to change the script
and treat the screenwriter like the ugly girl at the party.
And he was working
That's a fairly common thing in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right.
But Danny, you know, Danny takes it to an extreme. Who knows the reasons why he decided to do what he was doing? The circumstances of the movie were that they were 6 weeks before shooting when they decided to fire the director. And they wanted to bring in a director who they thought was, quote, a shooter. meaning somebody who would get the job done, and that's how they decided Danny DeVito, even though many people warned them against it, including the person that I was currently working for. I was then at Warner Brothers working for Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, who had just dealt with Danny on a movie which surprisingly is even worse than Duplex. called Death of Smoochie.
Death of Smoochie.
Oh, yeah.
Who I saw call Harvey Weinstein and, you know, beg him not to hire Danny on the movie. And warn him of everything Danny was going to do, and then Danny did everything. You know, why he did what he did, I don't know. You know, he's whatever.
I just noticed Lee take all the money out of his wallet. For people listening at home, you don't need to rob Lee tonight. You're not getting much.
You're not.
Don't attack him on the street.
I just pulled out a
I saw
of
a moth
in my
just
wall.
Fly right in front of my face.
Okay, so thank you for making me look like I'm not listening to what Larry is saying, which is not the truth. Thank you, Matt.
All the money just fell out of your wallet.
It was very distracting.
We're gossiping here about Danny DeVito.
It was quite distracting.
I'm digging
her gold.
I'm sure Larry...
So, you know, I mean, obviously Danny thought that whatever changes he was going to make were going to make the movie better or make it more a Danny DeVito movie or whatever. I clearly disagree with a lot of those changes he made, and it was a big mistake on Harvey Weinstein's part to hire him. It was probably a big mistake to fire the... You know who the original director was on the movie?
No, I do not.
Greg Mottola.
Oh, my God, really? Wow, that's a strikeout for Weinstein. Mottola super bad, and Adventureland, and...
Well, it was before all of those movies
right.
came out, but you know, I think he would have done a great job, and, you know, I was not, and that's the other thing, when you're a writer and you have these titles, like I've been an executive producer on movies as a writer, and if you are those titles and you're not a writer, that actually gives you certain sort of access and benefits, you know, that you're brought in on certain meetings and everything. But if you're the writer, it negates you being in on those meetings. Like, for example, if you're an executive producer on a movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
You would theoretically be allowed in every conversation on the hiring of every writer on the script.
Yeah.
But if you're the executive producer who is also the writer on the script, you're not in those meetings.
Sounds about right.
So for some reason, writer trumps. Writer just gets you kicked out of everything.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you
writer somehow writer lowers you on the scale of everything, and co-producer credit means nothing in
right.
a movie. It means something in TV, but it means nothing at all in a movie. There are probably makeup people who get co-producer credits on movies.
Oh,
well, they're producing makeup. There it is.
Well, Steve and I...
Well, makeup, makeup is actually really important on a lot of movies. And then I don't mean to diminish the makeup. I'm just saying that it doesn't mean what you think it means. It doesn't mean that you're somehow producing the movie. A co-producer credit is either a courtesy credit given to someone who's doing no producing at all, or somebody who's doing a kind of junior producing under a producer, like an assistant or, an apprentice producer.
So,
it's never given to somebody who's actually producing the movie.
Right. So, Larry, if you were to give advice to young writers like Steve and myself and whoever, okay, you would say don't expect to ever be on the set. And don't expect much of your work to make it to the screen, because it seems like there's a lot.
No, I mean that's not true. A lot of writers do end up on the set. A lot of writers do end up with probably a lot more on the screen, just not me. those are a minority of writers who have that level of influence, but there are writers who do end up on the set and that people do listen to. And
is that a political thing, though?
Is that why you're in Maryland?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if I'm being really honest with myself, the writers who do end up in that position are really good, most of them. I mean, really good, probably better writer than I am. Some of it is their ability to work within the system, let's call it. But some of it is that they are, you know, monstrously talented. That doesn't mean that they can, as you know, because you see, you've seen a lot of movies. I mean, the truth of the matter is that most movies suck. And the other truth is that, strangely enough, most television shows don't suck, and those are run by writers.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's really good to hear.
Yeah. Encouraging to hear.
That is really good to hear.
That's something.
But you know, they don't. There are too many people who control what goes into the content of a movie. And I'm not counting really actors and directors in this, but there are a lot of other people who are not good judges of what is good content in a movie, and they tend to act in a kind of a group way. And so none of them recognize the damage they're doing, because individually they're only doing one little thing. But you'd be writing a movie, and, like, for example, if you want to know why, obviously the PG-13 thing had an effect on I Love You, Beth Cooper. But the other thing that had an effect on I Love You, Beth Cooper is that any joke that seemed to stick out, somebody wanted to smooth down.
Oh,
right.
Not the same person every time.
But
there were enough different people in the process so that every joke that somebody might not have gotten, or somebody might have been offended by, or it seemed a little extreme, would have become a subject of debate. And as it went through the process, almost all of them were taken out.
Yeah. Yeah, from someone who read the script, I read the script and I read the novel. And like I said earlier, there were some jokes that are really funny that aren't in the movie. And so you kind of get a feeling for that too if you read the book.
But the thing about it is that when you see that happening, you think that that is the result of some kind of some asshole somewhere who is, like, deliberately making the movie not as good or as interesting as it could be, and it really isn't. It's a matter of a bunch of sort of committee people all having input and all taking out the one thing they find uncomfortable to them.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you have a product that's got nothing in it that's uncomfortable to anybody.
Right. Sterile.
Yeah.
And in television, there's an attempt to do that. The studios will try, and then they want the characters all to be likable and everything. But you do have, in television, one person generally who's the creator of the show and who is the writer, who it's his or her responsibility to see the show through, and they seem to be more successful in getting that stuff through these days than in movies. And I think part of that is every movie's a one-off, right?
Yeah.
You make the movie, and so everyone can worry an individual movie to a nub. And there are obviously great filmmakers who can do whatever they want, and when they do great movies. You know what I mean? They're good movies. Or if you have a movie that has, like, here's a perfectly commercial movie, but also I thought really well done, Crazy Stupid Love.
Okay.
You know, I really enjoyed it. My guess is, on that movie, you had Steve Carell, who had the power to sort of, like, say, no, we're going to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I imagine,
you know, there's a lot of things in that movie which I know would frighten various people along the way. There are too many moments in that movie that make it better for me that are too sad.
Yeah.
For people who worry about, well, maybe we shouldn't go there. But going to the sad thing is what makes the other thing that much better.
Right. Absolutely.
So my guess is that somebody who had some authority, like Steve Carell probably has at this point in his career, said,
yeah,
no, we're going to do that.
Yeah, and he probably didn't have it before. That's probably outworked. It's A-list now, so you're going to have more say because the studio is going to trust you, I guess, and directors will trust you. But you worked with Joe Dante and Chris Columbus. Chris Columbus did I Love You, Beth Cooper, and Joe Dante did Looney Tunes. And from appearances, you would think, at least in Joe Dante's case, your material would have been treated basically the same. You said it was about 70-30.
Right.
With I Love You, Beth Cooper, when they hired Chris Columbus, did you know it was going to be PG-13 pretty much at that point?
Not when he actually came aboard before the movie was even, book was even published. He read 100 pages of it and wanted to buy it. And no, it was when it was sold to Fox that they decided it was going to be PG-13. Chris's, I think, attitude was, we'll make whatever movie we want to make, and then
yeah,
whatever it is what it is. But they said it had to be PG-13. You know, and the I wish that movie had done better. Although strangely enough, it has had an it's similar to Office Space, and then it's had a tremendous afterlife. It's not necessarily the movie that I would have made, but it seems to have an audience.
I still enjoyed it, and I know a lot of people. This is the funny part. I know a lot of men my age. I'm 28. I know a lot of men around my age that actually very much enjoyed that movie. Maybe it was Haddon Pantonier a little bit, but I think it was relatable too, and I think it was a different take on most of those high school Ferris Bueller, John Hughes type movies. My review of it would be, I thought it was at times, and I'm not going to even compare it to the book because the book is award winning and it's great and people should read it, but the movie is. Sometimes it's a little too, what's the term you would use, Lee, when something's too mainstreamish? Like it was obvious, like Larry was talking, that's it. They smoothed things down.
Yeah.
They smoothed them down to make it more
sterile.
Sterile. Yeah, perfect. And but other than that, the movie was good. The acting was good. The writing was good,
yeah,
and the directing was pretty good too. So I mean, it was a good flick. I really liked it. I was surprised. I thought it'd be a chick movie before I read the book, and then I read the book, and I'm like, no. But it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it was going to do better than it did. I mean, I felt it was a pretty mainstream movie, but I thought, and I was surprised that it because when it came out, it really tanked. Just really tanked. But, you know, I think it was better than its reviews. But it was, you know, not as edgy as I would have liked. That's probably true of anything. You know, it's not like anybody's giving me the keys to any car or anything. I can't say that anything, that if I were allowed to do what I wanted to do with that amount of money, that I wouldn't lose it all for them, you know.
Well, what? So for your TV show, I mean, I know you can't divulge details and stuff. I know you're not doing it yet. You're pitching it, but is it? Can we expect the same kind of Larry Doyle writing with it? Are you going to be writing? Are you just creating it?
Well, I think you can expect to never see it. And I only say that based on experience. I've done, I don't know, 6 or 7 pilot scripts, and none of them have ever made it on the air. I'd like to say that was because I'm just so great that I can't possibly get on TV. But the truth of the matter is that's also the system. Maybe they're not good enough to get on the air, but it's also true that the waste edge in writing pilots is immense. And so even if these days, because things are, back when I first started, when I was on The Simpsons, I could literally walk into almost any network and pitch an idea and they would buy at least the script.
Yeah.
And they would buy that not because I was so great, but because I had this credit that they, you know, would say, we'll give that guy a shot, and that's worth, you know, $50,000 of our money. We'll do that. But they don't do that anymore. It's getting very hard to sell even a script. So I don't even know that I'll sell the script of this thing like that. And there's still, you know, two more big stages before it could get on the air.
Yeah.
Well, no, I have to sell the script.
Yeah.
And then I have to write it, and then they have to read it and decide that they want to make it as a pilot. And then when the pilot's made, you're right, then they test it and they do all the things they do. But those are two, in both of those stages, there's still a major proportion of things that get thrown out.
Do you think the producer, the name of the producer that you attach to the pilot, does that help you more or less get it made? What helps you the most, do you think, to get it at least to the, let's say at least get to the testing phase where they have shot a pilot and now you're testing it? What is the, what do you have to do to put together to get it to that point?
I don't know. I mean, the producer was attached to the last pilot I wrote. Is a name you might recognize, Jerry Bruckheimer.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Hmm. I've heard of him. So,
right.
Yeah, that didn't get shot.
That's crazy.
So I'm not sure you could find a bigger producer to be attached to your pilot than him, and it still didn't get shot. So that was just, that was a case where an executive bought the premise and he was replaced by somebody who didn't like the premise.
It's so weird. If I'm an executive and Larry Doyle and Jerry Bruckheimer walk into my office, don't you just, like, write a blank check?
Go write a blank check, yeah.
Well, Jerry Bruckheimer means something, but I guarantee you Larry Doyle doesn't mean anything. I'm not trying to be modest or anything. I'm just realistic. But you just, you know, you do these things and hopefully one of them will take. And like I said, I'm going to go out there and, you know, try to sell this thing. And if I sell it, I'll try to write the best version of it I can. And if they want to make a pilot, then, you know, then that's a whole other can of worms, because they still have this system in place where all the pilots get made at the same time. So you don't even get to make an ideal pilot. You kind of have, it's almost like a game show where you've got your pilot to make, and then there's a pit with all the available actors, and you have to run down to the pit and fight with all of the other people making pilots to get the best actor. And so you oftentimes, and I say this rather cavalierly because I've only actually produced one pilot of all the scripts that I've written. So I've only gone through that process once. And the studios and the networks all have an approved list of people for these pilots, and it's not a big list. And so 9 times out of 10, you can't even get the people that they say they'll approve because they're on another pilot.
Yep. Peter Tolan.
What's really funny to you guys is that 90% of the names on the approved list are people you've never heard of. But they're people that everybody in Hollywood thinks are going to be the next big thing, and a lot of times they are. But they're not. It's not like like an approved list in movies are almost always people who have headline successful movies.
Yeah.
TV, it's much more like we think John, you know, Krasinski is going to be the next breakout guy. And you'll see these guys because they'll often appear in as many pilots as they can because they are the person of the year. And they'll be in first, second, or third position on these pilots. And occasionally a weird kind of thing will happen, like with Whitney Cummings this year. Do you know who she is?
Yeah.
She's a really good stand-up, and she actually ended up with 2 shows this year.
She sure did.
And you're not very fond of her?
Her stand-up is fine. I think she lies about her age. to a degree where it's insulting. And I don't think her new show looks very funny. But that's just me.
I have it on good authority, by the way, that she does not lie about her age, that you can say whatever you want about how she looks based on her being 30 years old. But that's actually how old she is.
She is my – so she says she's 28. She's saying
– I know people who've gone – who went to college with her.
That is I don't know what to make of this then because she looks old. But that's all I'm going to say.
I'm just telling you that if she's lying about her age, it's not by more than a year or two, and not even that, according to people that I've talked to. But
Ray Doyle's word. I'm going to take your word.
But strangely enough, I mean, I've seen the show that she's in, Whitney, and the show that she wrote, and she'd be much better off being in the show that she wrote than.
That's what I heard. I heard the same thing. Yeah. I can't say by who I heard the same thing, but yes, I did. Go ahead, Steve. You have a question for Larry?
Yes, Larry. Was wondering if you could tell all of our listeners what it's like to work with Mike Judge on Beavis and Butthead, because we've had past guests who have worked with Mike Judge, and so I just want to know what your experience was like.
It's the easiest job imaginable, or was. You would write. You know, you'd come up with an idea, or you'd come up with 10 ideas, and you'd send them in to Glenn Eichler, who's now on Colbert, but he was the story editor, I guess was his title, or whatever, head writer, Beavis and Butthead. And he would go through them, and I don't know how much he discussed them with Mike, but he'd go, yeah, we'll take 1, 2, and 7, you know? And so then you'd write those up, and... I think he'd write an outline, and then he'd give you 1 or 2 suggestions, and then you write the whole thing up, and then you hand it in. And unlike the average Hollywood experience, where you have to rewrite everything and there's all this drama or whatever, they were in production mode where they're making a whole bunch of them, and you just handed in your script, and that was it. You were done, and you didn't hear of it again until it was made.
Wow.
And... so working with Mike, who I did meet and get to hang out with a bunch of times, wasn't about, like, rewriting scripts over and over again. He'd get whatever script he had. I've seen him do it, and not on my scripts, but on other people's scripts. And then he would just do the show. And sometimes it would match the script, and sometimes it wouldn't.
Wow.
It always seemed to work, but there wasn't any of the kind of fretting over it. There wasn't like when you do a script read on a normal television show, what will happen is after the script read, all of the executives from the studio will huddle over in one corner, and all the executives from the network will huddle over another corner, and then the writers will huddle over in another corner. And then the studio and the network will all give the writers notes on what they have to fix before they actually shoot the thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't any of that. It would just be Mike would read the thing, and he'd be kind of like, okay, okay. And then he would just, like, do it off the top of his head. And like I said, sometimes he would stick to the script, and sometimes he wouldn't. It all worked out fine. And I also, a couple of times I got to go down there when he was doing the video inserts, which were always done separately from the shows themselves. And you'd go down there, and you had seen the videos ahead of time, and you prepared 10 pages of jokes for every video. And he'd throw most of them out. But the most fun thing was you could sit in the booth. He'd be in the recording booth, and you'd be on the other side. And you'd both be watching the video on your monitors, and you could, like, say an ad lib into the microphone, and a second later, you'd hear Beavis saying it.
That's awesome. I love this.
You know, and that'd be really fun, but it was much more casual, and for the want of a better word, fun, than any of the other kind of Hollywood jobs that I
did. That's what it sounds like. I was going to ask, Larry, did you was it just not the right place, right time, or did you never get a chance? Well, why didn't you get a chance to work on King of the Hill which is one of my favorite shows. Is that something where you had the opportunity, couldn't take it? Because I know that was around the same time as your run on The Simpsons. Did you want to work on King of the Hill? What did you think?
Well, I was on The Simpsons.
Right.
When King of the Hill started, I don't think I would have, I mean, I like King of the Hill and everything, but I don't think I would have thought of moving over from King of the Hill to The Simpsons. There was a couple of people, well, obviously the guy who started King of the Hill, Greg Daniels.
Yes.
And in fact, I think, I'm not entirely sure of this, I think King of the Hill started the same year that I started on The Simpsons.
Yes, that's true. That is accurate.
And so it would have been very weird. Well, first of all, I couldn't have just moved over. I mean, I got the job in The Simpsons. I wasn't offered a job like King of the Hill. And I don't know if I could have ever moved over there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did my 4 years on The Simpsons, and then I did other things. And I wouldn't have probably... Right, I did movies, and I was doing pilots. I thought I was going to do my own show, and so I didn't. I didn't really think about being on King of the Hill, and I never really. Don't think I ever tried to get on King of the Hill, because I never. You know, like I said, I really like Mike, and I like working on Beavis and Butthead and doing stuff with him, but I never really wanted to like be asking him for a job.
Yeah.
You know, if he wants me to do something, I'm happy to do it. But I never really wanted to be like, hey, Mike, can you get me, you know, I don't know Greg Daniels, for example.
Right.
There.
That's an interesting question, though, Larry. How do you decide as a writer who of your friends to ask for help and who not to? Because obviously you worked with Mike Judge, and you're like, I don't want to ask Mike Judge for a job. And you may have never even had to. You were doing movies and whatever at the time. But you said you got your job on The Simpsons because you knew two of the writers, and you're one of the few. We had Sam Simon on. You're one of the few non-Harvard writers that they signed at that time period. So how did you decide, I'm going to ask my writer friends to do The Simpsons? But, like, how's that work?
I didn't, though. Okay. I don't think I've ever asked anybody to get me a job.
Really?
The guys on The Simpsons, what happened was I was out in L.A., strangely enough, on a Beavis and Butthead thing, because I was doing a cover story for Rolling Stone on Beavis and Butthead, where I did this sort of fake profile of them. And I can't imagine them doing this now because the money that they spent for nothing. They actually flew me out to L.A. so I could pretend to be hanging out in L.A. with Beavis and Butthead.
Wow. Jesus.
That's a nice
gig.
That's a good vacation.
Yeah.
And so I did things like I went to various places that are in the profile, and I got people to play along where they would, real people, would pretend like I was at Fred Siegel buying clothes for Beavis and Butthead, and I would do Beavis and Butthead at them and make them react to it. Or I went to a strip club with Ron Jeremy, and we pretended like I was Beavis and Butthead at the strip club with Ron Jeremy. He's a porn star.
Yeah, you're well aware, Larry. Well aware.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, you know. Now, I guess I would just make the whole, I interviewed Pamela Anderson about them and stuff. And, but I was just out there doing it. And so I went to, I happened to be on the Fox lot, and I stopped by to visit a couple of friends of mine who were now working on The Simpsons. And I just was talking to them, and they said, well, we got a new showrunner coming in, and he's looking for writers. Are you interested? And I said, yeah, I'm interested, because I had tried to get on the show many, many times. I'd sent them stuff, and you know, my agent had sent them stuff. And so they just, you know, recommended me, and finally the samples got read, and I got the job. But I wasn't like I asked them for the job. I was actually there doing something else. And that's probably also true of most jobs, too, which is, you know, sadly enough, it's easier to get a job when you have a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than if you really need a job.
So would you say, from what I'm understanding here, would you say it's important to know people, but in most cases, what happens is they ask you if you want a job? Like, or do you suggest to young writers not asking their friends to help with work or what?
Well, here's what it, like I said, it, you know, a lot of people look at the movie business like it's some sort of mysterious thing, and it's really not. It's exactly the same as almost every other business. So what you do is, it's not like, because they say it's who you know, but you wouldn't say that if you were in a car factory.
Yeah.
What you would say is, it's who you've worked with.
Right.
And so the reason why those two guys were willing to recommend me to their boss was because they had worked with me and they thought I could do the job. Likewise, I've done the same for a lot of other people who I've worked with who I thought could do a job. And when you take it from my point of view of the people I'm recommending them only partially and maybe even minutely to do them a favor. I'm recommending them for two reasons. One is, if it's a show or something I'm on, we need the help.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I want to recommend somebody who I think is going to give us that help. And two is, if I recommend, I'm just saying from my point of view, and you have to think about this from everyone else's point of view, if I recommend somebody who does a great job, then that accrues to me.
Yes.
Right.
More credit to me.
Yep.
With my boss. As somebody who can, and also I gain more power in my ability to recommend people.
Yes, yes.
Because I've recommended people who do a good job. However, if I recommend somebody who's a buddy of mine who needs a job and then they totally screw it up, A, my standing on that job goes down.
Yep.
And again, like I said, you could take this for any job anywhere, not just Hollywood writing. This right. would make sense at a paper mill, right? My standing goes down, and my ability to get anyone else hired disappears.
Yep. Yeah, Steve and
because
I.
Because I'm not reliable.
Yeah.
So when I say, I don't want to make it seem like people were begging me to have a job. It was just like in any other kind of business. I worked with people. They thought I could do the job. When a job came open, they were happy to recommend me for that job because they thought I could do it. And
so,
hopefully I did a good enough job that, you know, it helped them.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know, dozens of times people who have worked with me who I feel like can handle it, I'll be happy to recommend for something.
So most of these people that you recommend, though, you're saying it was in a position where you already had worked with them. So almost like references, almost like references on an on a resume, if you will.
Yeah, I would never recommend somebody who I didn't know, or unless I had come across something that, you know, like one of the first job I ever got, I got from a guy who didn't know me at all. I wrote a piece that ended up in the New Yorker, and he read it and thought it was great, and so he asked me to try out for the Letterman show, and. Hmm. I did. He was working on there at the time, Randy Cohen. And he did the monkey cam. He was the guy who did the monkey cam. But I submitted stuff to there. I didn't get the job. But he liked what I did enough that he passed on to a friend of his who got me hired on this precursor to Comedy Central on some stupid show there. But the whole point was that he had done that because he had read something of mine that he liked.
That's very cool. Now, when have you had a situation where people have wanted you to recommend them, and how did they get you to even read their work? Because I know, you know, I don't even have a job, and people are asking me to read their fucking scripts all the time, and I want to be a good guy and read them all, but it's time consuming. So, have you had people recommend you, and you're like, I got to read some spec work or something?
I don't get sent a lot of scripts, probably because of the track record of the movies that I've made. I mean, I made three movies now, and all three of them were, at least initially, financial disasters. I do get sent, people send me novels all the time to read.
Oh, that's even worse.
Oh, wow.
Because they want blurbs for the novels and stuff. And I've read some of them.
Yeah.
I have. I'm doing it less now, primarily because I feel like I did it. I blurbed too many things early on.
I love that. Yeah.
it just whatever value that it might have kind of was being pissed away. But I just remember seeing at one point there were like two books out at the same time that had blurbs for me, and that seemed kind of embarrassing to me.
Yeah.
Not that I won't do it, but it is becoming increasingly rare for me to do it.
Well, you know how the business is, though. You know, Larry, you may be like, well, I'm not hot right now. No one's sending me scripts. If you pitch this show to the networks and it gets picked up, you're all of a sudden the bee's knees, and every fanboy on the planet's going to be sending you scripts. So wouldn't worry about that. But it does lead me to my question. How much of this business is about – what part of this business is about enjoyment, and what part of this business is about survival? So do you take some movies – or sell some scripts for survival, and then what's the point? Do you enjoy? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's all enjoyable, but I've never done anything purely for the money.
Yeah.
I've always thought going into it that it was going to be great. I'm not saying that it was. I'm just saying that that was my thought going in. And I do think that that's fairly common with writers. And you do have to understand, like, there are a bunch of movies that I would go nowhere near that other guys or women are just, like, so crazy over that genre of movie that for them it really is something they really want to work on. I mean, like, the equivalent for me would be when I did the Looney Tunes movies, for example.
Yes.
That's probably something that a lot of screenwriters would like, no, I don't want to do a stupid cartoon movie. But I love the Looney Tunes. And so when given the opportunity to do that, I really wanted to do the best possible Looney Tunes movie, and I really thought it was going to be great. It was a movie that paid very well, but I didn't do it for the money at all. I would have done it for nothing, probably.
Right.
I've noticed
that your resume, though, it's all the stories are in one way or another connected to you, whether it's duplex with you combine the original story of your wife and you moving into the duplex with the story you told us. Looney Tunes, you're a huge fan. I Love You, Beth Cooper was your own novel. Go Mutants is your own friggin' novel. So, I mean, everything's been kind of directly related to you that's gotten made.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of that comes from the fact that, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm just trying to be poor-mouthing myself or something, but I've never been, like, hugely hot in the business. And so I haven't really had to deal with the temptation that some of these guys have to deal with of people just offering them money to work on something. That's not been how I've worked. I've written probably, I mean, you're talking about those four, three of which were made, but there's another dozen that I've written and sold.
Oh, wow.
That didn't get made. And you know, I mean, like Shooting Stuart, for example, and will probably never be made. But all of them were things that I came up with and thought that I could do really well. But that's primarily because no one was coming to me and saying, can you do 3 weeks on Transformers 3?
Yeah.
You know, and if I had been, it was funny, someone was talking about, we were watching a Midnight in Paris. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone said, you know, you should see this. It's exactly like your life because it's this guy. He's a screenwriter, but he really wants to be a novelist, blah, 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 blah. And I said, his situation is so different than mine. A, I am a novelist. I wrote a novel.
Two of them.
But B, and more importantly, he's a successful screenwriter. But it is important dynamic difference. I wrote the novels because, you know, there was time between the jobs I could get in screenwriting.
Yeah.
The reason why that character never really wrote the novel is he's got golden handcuffs on. You know, he's got ways to lucratively fill his time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You know,
and
at least the way it seemed in the movie, and not very unrealistically, by the way, because I know these guys, I know several of them, that they could, every week, they could be making $100,000 or more rewriting some screenplay, and they literally have to push away from the table in order to work on their own passion project or the thing that they really want to do. Because on every script that comes down the pike of a certain kind, because with each of these guys, it is a certain kind of movie that they'll get hired for over and over again. Somebody is willing to throw money at them just to piss on the script. Not just because they think they'll make that script better, but also these certain people that I know, their name on a script will make more people pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much input they've had.
Well, Larry,
I've never had that temptation. You know, like I said, I've never really been in that position where I don't know what kind of horrible sellout I would have been had I been given the opportunity to really sell out.
So you're that kind of defeats my next question, which I was going to ask you. Like I talked to Alan Spencer quite a bit and John Sayles, and it seems like they do some ghostwriting on a lot of screenplays. So you haven't been asked to do that. But is that something then you would feel comfortable doing, since all the other projects you've done have been pretty personal? Would you ghostwrite and rewrite on scripts and just get a nice fat payday out of it?
Well, they're not ghostwriting.
Well, they're credited on a lot of the scripts.
They don't get credited, and they may try. They may
millions.
May have provisions in there where they don't want credit on a movie, and they don't ask for credit. But ghostwriting is really not the right word for what they're doing, because they're both doing that on Writers Guild movies.
Yeah, so and they're rewriting.
They're rewriting movies. And I'm guessing John Sayles is doing a lot more of it than Alan Spencer is. But ghostwriting is not really quite the right word for what they're doing. They're rewriting movies, and they're not seeking credit on what they write. That's not a game that I got into. It's not a game that I'm trying to think. I believe I've only ever once rewritten an existing script. And that was very early on. It was the Miramax thing. You know, they hired me, they bought Duplex, and then they want me to do everything. And so they had me take a stab at this script called She's All That.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And I bring it up because they wanted me to go at the script, and they had very specific ideas what they wanted me to do. And what I didn't know is I did it, but what I didn't know is that they hadn't told the director or the writer that I was doing it. So there's literally nothing that I wrote that's in the movie, because the director refused to read the script that I wrote. Because he was so mad at them doing that.
Wow.
I do want to say,
that was the only time I ever did a rewrite of an existing script. There were a couple of other times where I ended up rewriting scripts that I didn't know existed, because this is the other thing they'll sometimes do to you in Hollywood, is they'll come to you and say, we'd like to do blank, and there'll be a one-line description, the most plain thing, you come up with this own idea. And I was hired not once but twice, based on my take on a one-line idea, only to find out that that one-line idea came from a script that had already been written.
Right.
And in both cases, I refused to read the script that had been written. But technically, those were rewrites of something that I never saw.
Well, I do want to tell everyone listening, and I hope people enjoy hearing about writing, because I do, and Steve does, I know, because we're
writers,
students of the game.
Yes.
But LarryDoyle.com is a great place to go for Larry's work, as all of Larry's work. Scripts, clips of shows, it'll tell you everything he's worked on, everything. LarryDoyle.com, it'll say at the top of the page, Larry Doyle, world's finest writer.
That's nice. Good.
Which seems kind of, it must be glib, because it would be a 180 from the way Larry's been talking.
It's a darn good publicist you have to make that site.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very 50s oriented site.
Yes,
it's,
it is.
I mean, it's designed to look like a 50s ad, so.
No, and it's very cool. And you can also follow Larry Doyle on Facebook and Twitter, at Larry Doyle. And I really like having you on, Larry. I really appreciate you doing it. I'd like you to do it again, maybe after the show gets picked up of yours, I'm hoping. Knock on wood.
Yeah, wouldn't count on that. We'll see if they'll even have, you know, we'll see if I can even set the meetings. But I sure hope so, because I am flying out there and everything. Whatever. The business has changed a bit. Maybe it'll happen. I'll go on the show after that.
Or even if it doesn't happen, Larry, just
no
come on, and
come
we'll
on
just
by.
Talk shop.
Right.
Even if it does.
Okay.
You always got friends here.
It's a deal.
Okay.
Thank you, Larry. I'll be talking to you soon. Is there anything else you need to promote?
Nope. People should buy all the books.
Yeah, buy your new book coming out. Book. And what's the name of the book again? November to look for?
Deliriously Happy. And Go Mutants is out in paperback. It's got an index in it now. So
Go Mutants.
You can look up all the stupid movies that I...
Mutants, so I highly suggest it. It's
good.
Yeah. It's better than Cowboys versus Aliens, too. I'll tell you that.
I didn't see Cowboys versus Aliens, unfortunately, but I will eventually.
Yeah, let me know how that goes for you, Larry. Let me know how it goes.
Okay.
I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, pal.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay.
You're the best. Thank you.
Bye.
He's so dry funny.
He's great.
Yeah.
Like, I love him.
Oh, my God.
He's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, this is what annoys me about Hollywood. See, it's one of these interviews that I start, and now, and the audience doesn't want to hear me. Crickets.
Oh, man.
Crickets. But screw the audience.
Screw them. Yeah.
This is what I got to say. This is the time where we do an interview, right? And afterwards, you're like, how does that guy not have 3 shows on TV?
Yeah.
Right?
Kind of curious.
Am I wrong? Because how much funnier is Chuck Lorre than Larry Doyle?
Bring back those crickets for...
I'm not ripping on Chuck Lorre. Look, I'm not ripping on Chuck Lorre. Oh, calm down, people. Calm down.
You people are nuts.
But I'm just saying, Larry Doyle's a funny
fucking guy
and a great writer.
Yeah.
How does he not have a show or two?
I don't know. He's at meetings. Plenty of people take meetings with him.
Well, he hopes, because he's flying out there anyway.
You know what? Does that not sound like us? Come on.
Do people,
like, Jesus.
Do people want to not work with you if you just have a couple of things that don't pan out? Is it just like, but the thing is, they'll listen to your pitch or they'll read your pilot. That's the thing. They're not.
He's worked plenty. I mean, I Love You, Beth Cooper just came out like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon for screenwriters every couple years.
He's done a lot of stuff. That's great, but like,
Dude, I guess he's just one of those guys where it's like he said himself, he's never been down, but he's never been up.
Yeah.
He's always just been there in the middle.
Yeah.
And you're one of those guys that's always going to get work because you're in the middle.
Right.
But you're never going to be in demand.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he hasn't been in demand is all I'm saying.
You write for The Simpsons. How
he's
you not
so
the show?
Sharp and funny, man. But see, this is another problem with shows like The Simpsons and with... you have like 20 to 30 people in a writer's room, right? Right. All hired to work on the show. And they all leave at some point, because who's going to work on that show for 23 fucking years?
Nope.
Other than Matt Groening. And you're going to tell me James L. Brooks is there every day?
No.
Yeah, no,
he
so,
ain't.
Look, I mean, at some point everyone leaves. And then there's only so much Hollywood to go around. And you have to give... There's 30 Simpsons writers pitching movies now. And I guess he probably got caught up in that conundrum, too, where it's like, well, there's 30 Simpsons guys under contract. So, yeah conundrum, it's a word.
Look it up, Luisi. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have two eyes, so maybe that's why you didn't know it.
Oh, they love the two eyes. They love the two eyes.
That's great.
But, well, Larry's website's so 50s, and so's our audience.
Yeah. I was going to say, that sounds...
Our audience is right out of I Love Lucy,
I know,
too.
That is...
That's very
that
nice.
That is some honeymooners'
nice.
Laughter and applause.
Oh, Lee, they loved you with the honeymooners there. I got to calm them down.
One of these days...
Good. To
the moon.
Would someone just hit the applause sign? It's you know, shorting out.
It's that one guy again. He only laughs at you. He only likes
it's
you.
He goes out of
I'm
his
convinced.
Way to laugh when no one else is laughing.
I bought him a drink. That's what.
Someone's got
that one. I don't understand.
Imodium.
There was
Imodium in
the
audience.
That was after the ghost pepper. That guy just had a ghost pepper. That's why.
Yeah.
You know what's great though?
What
about
is great?
Larry Doyle, too. He told some really great stories.
He did.
He's one of those campfire guys.
He also holds...
He's not afraid of gossiping a little,
He holds back nary a thing.
Well, it's
My
funny
God.
Because I don't even think he's a Jew, and he loves talking.
Right.
He loves talking.
He does like the gab.
Doyle's Irish?
Doyle,
it's not O'Doyle. O'Doyle rules.
O'Doyle rules.
O'Doyle rules.
He's certainly self-effacing enough.
Yeah,
he's great.
O'Doyle.
He's great.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm not even being modest. I'm just being real.
I feel like...
Just being realistic.
I know.
I
feel like I learned a lot from that, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm a little depressed.
I was going to ask him...
Because he basically said...
Why
that,
aren't you teaching classes?
I know. Well, maybe, you know...
It doesn't go over.
Maybe if you send him $70.
Yeah. But, I mean, what are you going to go into one of his classes and he's be like, all right, lesson one class, the entire system is set up to prevent any original thought or content from creeping in. Good luck.
Yeah, that's kind
of
what...
A bunch of
been...
people sit in a room with a dial and every second they have their hand on it.
Well, Caesar and I were having a conversation.
A
he's like, well, you know, all they really care about is marketing and advertising. I go, you know, I don't even think it's that. I think... Here's how this process goes, in case our listeners missed a show here or there. Jim McCarron's has been on, talked about this, some other people. You sit in a room when you pitch a show at a network, and it's to one person at the network. It's not to six. It's not to Les Moonves. It's never to Leslie Moonves.
Never.
No. Never. We're trying to have Kelly call on in the next week, and I'm going to ask him, but I doubt it's ever to Kelly.
Yeah.
So what happens is you get one of the underlings. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying because I don't want to go through all the terms and titles.
Just in a corporate link.
Right.
Yeah.
Corporate link. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So anyways, but what happens is you're sitting in a room with one person, and it's all based on that one person, whether it's a gay man, a woman, a straight man from Minnesota, a lesbian from Idaho, whatever. It's all based on their taste.
Right.
If they like it, because it's their enthusiasm, their energy, and they're going to push it.
Right.
No one else is going to push that project then, because they have to take that project to Kelly Call, Les Moonves, Nina Tassler, and say, this is the project that needs to get made.
Right. They're not going to say, listen, they're not going to present some material to give and say, I didn't care for this, but let me know what you think.
It's all a game of luck. It's
right.
Who you end up in the room with, and do they actually like your script? Do they relate to it personally? Because you would like to think these corporate people all think, like, globally, and they're like, oh, I don't even like this script. I know it's going to be a hit.
Right.
Bullshit.
They don't do that.
Bullshit.
Yeah, they don't do that.
It's like if you're a porn distributor, yet you're distributing porn you don't even like.
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Doesn't,
you wouldn't distribute it.
It doesn't even give you a boner.
It wouldn't distribute it.
No, they wouldn't.
No. You could say, I know good porn. I don't like it, but it's good. You wouldn't say that. That never happened.
That, by the way, is a fantastic analogy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wonder where you picked that.
Well, the businesses are so close to each other.
Yeah, they are.
Speaking of the porn industry,
I was about to say
TwoCrankyGuys.com.
Oh yes.
I did a movie review this weekend with Bruce Fretz, who will be joining us Thursday.
He's got splaining to do.
Don't forget, I'm taking tomorrow off because I'm going to a movie screening, a studio screening.
Right.
You know how it is.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be on the need
maybe
to know.
Maybe Jimmy Woods will be around. Maybe Alexander Skarsgård. Maybe Stellan Skarsgård.
Wait, anyone go to those? Do they let just anybody?
No. My name's actually on a seat.
Wow.
Yeah, well, let's not get crazy is all I'm saying.
You've got Hollywood
free
now.
Corn, free soda. You know. Maybe I'll get some Junior Mints for free.
If you get snow caps, I want some.
No, because you cannot talk during the movie because it's a critic screening as well.
Good luck.
And they don't really like that. So
don't talk during the movie.
And I have a feeling I'm not sitting with the studio people. I'm sitting with the critics.
I don't want to see a Jonathan Rosenbaum essay about the guy sitting next to me.
I was going to say, you're going to hear from Michael Phillips. And he's going to be like, you know, I sat next to this fat guy in a Hawaiian shirt at the screening of Straw Dogs.
I didn't even know they let his...
He was eating my popcorn.
You know, though, if you drop your phone at this, the floor won't be as dirty.
Oh, you know what happens on those floors.
Hey.
All over those fucking floors. And I dropped my phone during Bucky Larson, and I had to pick it up. My hand came up, and like, it was like if you wrap duct tape around your hand. If I would have slapped Steve, I would have came off with half a beard.
Oh, man.
And then the other hand had, like, Skittles and, like...
Junior Mints?
Yeah, whatever you really like. There was a Jujube, and for whatever reason, they got softer. Crazy. Bucky Larson, by the way, I have to get out. We're probably going to go into overtime talking about this.
I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Too cranky. Well, thanks for reading Bruce and I's review.
Yeah, Lee. Thanks.
Thanks for asking.
Thanks for asking, yeah.
We don't have a review up or anything
Not
on his
all.
Website.
Not at all.
Maybe you heard of it?
Possibly.
They've been on the show a few times.
Okay. He didn't read
Lee
the review.
Lee doesn't like that.
I didn't read the review. Is it just up yesterday?
Okay. I gotta let them go. They won't stop. Hey, calm down, people. Calm down, people.
Got a light.
It's great.
Calm down. But I just can't believe Lee didn't read my review. Whoa! Keep her down.
I can't believe it either.
Keep her down.
You're not funny and nobody.
Oh, who's that guy? Sit down, guy. Oh, I got your back on that, Lee. Guy over there thinks he's hilarious.
I think his name is Phil.
Listen, TwoCrankyGuys.com. I did a review for Bucky Larson with Bruce Fretz, as I've said 28 times. And Bruce and I have decided it is the worst movie ever together. We've made that decision because we feel like it's kind of like when you're connecting like the...
Worse than toys?
Yeah, it's kind of like when you both have like one of those cut-up hearts, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you put them together for one full heart.
Uh-huh.
Well, Bruce took his worst movie ever. I took my worst movie ever, and they were both Bucky Larson.
Wow.
We brought it together.
Powers combined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after we were on the phone, half the review that's on the site isn't everything that was said. I do want to preface by saying I still love Adam Sandler.
We all love Sandler.
We all do.
We love Adam Sandler.
We all do wrong every once in a while. I hope I'm. No longer my Facebook friend.
No. We're going to chop the mulligan.
Should I check right now?
Yes, please.
You want to check on the show if Nick Swartzen's my bud?
We should. No, you know what?
I have been deleted.
Oh, you have been?
Ooh.
Oh. Yeah. So,
when? As of when?
It doesn't say as of
20 seconds ago?
But it says I have to add him.
Oh.
And you didn't before because I remember seeing him as a friend of yours.
Oh, he was. Yeah. Oh, I should check Peter Dante, too.
Yeah, check Dante. I just remember going to that.
I'm good on the Peter Dante and the Nicholas Goosen.
Beautiful.
But I am out of the Nick Swartzen business.
Do you really blame the guy?
So he read the review, Steve.
He did.
Remember? You're like, well, maybe he'll get lost with all the other reviews.
All 9 of them, like you said?
Yeah, that's the problem. Rotten Tomatoes, it got 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And we're going into overtime, by the way. It'll only be a few minutes. Well, it was on Rotten Tomatoes, 0%.
Was it one
But
of
there's only like 10 reviews.
Yeah, right. Some of these movies, they come out and they don't screen it for critics.
That's what happened. They didn't screen it for critics.
And when they don't do that, the movies are usually really bad.
But the problem is, if you're Nick Swartzen and no one's... when you're a movie star, or want to be a movie star, because he's not ever going to be one now. When you...
Well,
He's a lead.
You were inspired by Larry Doyle.
Listen, listen. Long story short here. I love you, Adam. Long story short here.
Do ya?
When you're a movie star, the first, especially when you're not yet a movie star. So this was his first movie with a lead role. You're running to the Google and you're bringing up all the reviews. You got to read them all. You got to read them all. You're addicted. You're addicted. You want to see what people say about you and your performance and this and that. Look, when I do a play, I go right to the high school newspaper.
Right.
Well, what did Montini Catholic have to say about my performance?
But you know what you did? After the review, you gave that kid a wedgie. Guaranteed, if it wasn't a good review, wedgie.
So
people who say they don't read critics and reviews of their material,
lying?
All of them?
Well, here's the deal. Even if they're not lying, someone has told them.
Oh, so they know.
They're going to get told no matter what.
Regardless.
So anyways, thank you. So anyways, Nick Swartzen probably Googled Bucky Larson movie reviews, and I'm pretty sure within the first 10 that comes up.
Mm. You said first 5, but we'll go 10.
And he sees and he goes Bruce Fretz and Matthew Arndt, fuck those guys.
We're really kind of cutting into Thursday's material, but all right.
Well,
yeah, I don't want to get too into this.
Let's not get too into it.
See what the New York Times had to say about Bucky Larson.
I bet you Swartzen might not be friends with the New York Times then.
I don't think he has been for a while.
I doubt this was screened for Stanley Kaufman at the New Republic.
Who wants to hear about the New York Times review of Bucky Larson?
I do.
Yes.
Okay, people. All right.
I love that. They are great.
Anyways. Bucky Larson, born to be a star, is the tale of a small-town farm boy from Iowa with a Prince Valiant haircut, a bad overbite, and big dreams, who comes, like so many other small-town dreamers, to the San Fernando Valley to become a pornographic film star. Let me find a quote from this. It occurs to me that Bucky Larson, born to be a star, may have been made for similar purpose, to console every actor who has ever been in a movie... that is a little less bad than this one. Let me put the matter another way. This may be the worst Pauly Shore has ever been in. By the way,
oh, you said
stole
that
line from me on Two Cranky Guys.
That's exactly what you said.
When was this printed?
Oh, day
Motherfucker. Day after my review.
Wow. Oh, someone did some Googling to steal your line.
A.O. Scott?
I guess so. Plagiarist.
Who's their reviewer? Stephen Glass?
A.O. Scott.
A.O. Scott.
If you look at twocrankyguys.com in this review, I have the same exact line.
That's exactly what
you
said.
The worst Pauly Shore movie ever.
I read, and you said, which is a scary, well, yeah, you added, which is kind of scary to think about. But yeah, you were plagiarized. How do you feel?
Used and abused.
You've been plagiarized. Huh. Well, that just happened. I can't
believe
that.
For his part, Mr. Johnson, Don Johnson, who's in the film, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. The movie was not screened for critics, and I should have taken the hint.
Wow.
Don't get excited. There's not too much to see.
Oh.
So he was going to rip on Don Johnson and just decided to stop the review.
And Kevin.
By the way, Don Johnson at least tried his best.
Yeah.
Because the script was that bad.
Yeah.
I don't fault Don Johnson at all. He's fantastic.
What about Kevin Nealon?
The AV Club says, in the painfully unfunny latest comedy from Adam Sandler's Happy Madison. Oh, see, I don't even want to read these.
Yeah, you might not want to.
The AV Club got their noses turned up a little bit.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's more your newspaper than the AV Club.
Yeah, as you could say.
A little more Pretension Weekly over there.
No, I disagree with them frequently.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
So anyways, you know, you don't want to be recycling material. And you're going to have all the time in the world to mention this on Thursday. Unfortunately. What's up? What are you doing?
Oh, my God. What are you talking about? You're sitting next to Mike Terza.
So anyway, what else do we have? News? Are we going to do news? Or what are we going to be doing?
Sorry.
Moving right along.
And by the way, I'm going to read some of this review.
Okay.
Well, first of all, can I play the official trailer?
If you
just want. Just so people know what I had to go through.
And me.
it because it's not on TV anywhere.
Good luck.
Wow. Yeah.
Love that new haircut.
You get a lot of compliments on it. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, don't thank me. Thank the bowl.
That Fuzzbot said I look like Brad Pitt.
Meet Bucky Larson.
Get out of here. You're fired.
Fired?
He was going nowhere.
Don't let these people get you down.
You're destined for greatness.
Until he made...
Tonight, we're going to watch nude movies.
A shocking discovery.
Is that who I think it is?
That's your folks.
I'm the son of two stars.
We were going to tell you on your 50th birthday.
This is my destiny. I'm going to go to California, and I'm going to be a star on the silver screen. I'm the son of two movie stars. That's like a super, duper movie star.
Hey, how are you?
Don't sell kitty porn, man.
Oh, I'm allergic to cats.
Self-service, pal.
No, I don't want to buy a movie. I want to be in one.
There's a house party tonight. You can make a lot of connections there.
You little crackhead.
Have you laughed once yet?
No.
It just gets
me. Ladies and gentlemen, Bucky Larson!
Show them what you got, kid.
From Columbia Pictures.
Miles Deep.
Pleasure to meet you.
I'm a director.
His parents were famous. Maybe a nostalgic market.
Do you want to shoot something tonight?
Yeah!
And Happy Madison.
We're making a movie!
All right, Bucky, drop your pants. Let's see how you look.
That's it. It's average.
This fall.
I uploaded it to the net. It's got a million hits in 3 days.
Guys aren't threatened, and the girls think they've got a prize.
Compared to you, he's gigantic. You make me look like I've got a big...
Change in life.
Nick Swardson is...
You don't look like the average porn star.
Oh, yeah, because I'm wearing a sweater.
Bucky Larson.
I've never ridden in a convertible before. Stand up, feel free.
Oh, it's still moving!
Yeah.
Bucky Larson, born to be a star.
That's a great accent.
Your accent's awesome.
I love that accent.
Everyone keeps talking about my accent, but I'm from America.
Let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel.
Lee?
Wow, that's something. Poor Nick Swardson, man. Really, guy got...
Steve, bring you back?
Wow. Unfortunately. Oh, and by the way, Bruce... I'm putting this on my taxes. This was a work expense. I'd like my $7 back, please.
Here's what I said. This is my quote. Compared to A.O. Scott. My quote was, no, but Pauly Shore does show up in that scene. And by the way, when this is Pauly Shore's worst film, what does that mean?
Yeah.
That was my quote. Sounds like A.O. Scott was ripping the goods.
Yeah.
He was.
Mr. Scott's getting a letter.
Elvis Mitchell would never do no
you
shit.
You
like
send
that.
A letter.
Actually, when I see Michael Phillips tomorrow, I'm going to say your old review buddy, Scott, stole one of my lines.
So what you should do is to say, hey, I got a message for Scott, and then kick him in the balls.
Oh.
This guy here, Tony, is going to kick you in the nuts. Pretty
much. I mean, that's how you do things.
Don't kick Mike Phillips.
And then if you continue reading the review, you'll see the Jack and Jill trailer and hear about how much I love Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
But and hear me call Alan Covert the equivalent of Paul Newman compared to Nick Swardson.
Yes, it got real.
There was a little burying in Nick Swardson going on.
Yeah.
But
Jamie Kennedy have I seen an upcoming get buried.
Man.
People love the reviews, though.
So, anyways,
Steve says I should do no more.
Yes. We had a long heart to heart about this.
All right. Well, all right.
You cannot
save it for Thursday.
I was going to say.
Yeah, we're going to save it for when Bruce is on.
Yeah.
All right.
But Steve says I'm making bad moves. You can't criticize. You can't be a do it all.
You can't.
It's a mix. People are clapping. People are booing.
You don't know me. You don't know me.
Oh, that was pretty good.
I thought so.
Megan really texting?
By the way, I'm not the father.
Listen, Maury Povich.
God.
So,
news. What else is going on? Should we even do news?
I don't know.
I don't know. Let's save it.
You know.
I say maybe we save it for the week.
You take the good, you take the bad, you know.
But can I tell you what Steve reminds me of when he does that?
Every one of you in this class is heavily armed right now.
That's right. Your keychain, your fists, that huge engagement ring. Are you sure you're in the right class? This is women's self-defense.
Please, miss. All the other courses are full.
I'm sorry. It's for women only. We're trying to maintain a certain comfort level here.
But I hate men as much as you.
I don't hate men. I just hate being a victim.
I hate being a victim, too.
Look,
I was at a girl's slumber party last night when three men pushed me to the ground and made me eat dirt.
Okay, you can stay. Now grab a whistle and prepare to be empowered. Most women who are attacked are subdued by verbal threats. Today we're going to get used to hearing these threats, keeping our cool, and practicing some responses of our own to the most vulnerable areas of a man's anatomy.
Shut up and give me your purse.
I don't know you. That's my purse. Okay. I want everybody to try. You first.
See, I don't hate men.
I don't hate men.
Give me your purse. Now.
That's my purse.
Don't be afraid to shout it. That's my purse. Try it again.
That's my purse. I don't know you.
That's you.
I don't know you.
That's
my purse.
You are Bobby Hill.
You know what? I am.
Pamela Adlon followed you around for weeks to get that voice
down.
That
I do like the short pants.
You want to do one story?
Sure. Let's do one.
What were you talking about before Larry called? I feel like we had something and we lost it.
We might have.
Nothing. It's definitely been NPR Tuesdays, by the way.
It has
Thanks,
been.
Larry.
Yeah.
That was totally Larry's fault, though, by
the
way.
But
with that monotone of his.
Yeah, but Larry was a fantastic guest for reasons that I
wouldn't say I was
won't
fantastic.
Waste time going into.
Say I was good, but let's be realistic here.
I suppose. Fuck. Can I say fuck?
Love Larry Doyle.
Fuck.
Rick Perry says the first round of stimulus, it created zero jobs.
I don't know you.
Is that the biggest lie you've ever heard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Liar, liar, pants on fire.
By the way, his state, he created virtually no jobs in his time as governor.
So, our review for Rick Perry.
Boo.
Liar, 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 pants on fire. Liar, 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 pants on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about right.
Yeah, it sounds accurate.
Okay, well, how about this one for you? Michelle Bachmann.
What's the botter?
We know that President Obama stole over $500 billion out of Medicare to switch it over to Obamacare.
Uh-huh.
Right. Is that true?
True or false?
What if I just said that just 1-8 and just said that was totally true? He grabbed it and he used it to put a grill on his car and get it lowered.
Then I can't wait till the Tea Party wins and you got to cut your own leg off.
Yeah,
but do you know, this is how Michelle Bachmann asked it, though. She goes, you remember when President Obama, you remember when he took all that money from Medicare? Do you remember that? It was not awesome.
Yeah.
That's how she does her speeches.
Rick, I can't even go into this. This is just ridiculous.
Are you sure not reading The Onion? Is this real?
No, this is from PoliticFact.com.
Oh, well, it is.
It is very credible, because all it does is take quotes from certain people and then put facts to the quotes.
That's true.
You know, they rip on Barack Obama just as much as they rip on Tea Party people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't even call them tea baggers like Bill Maher does. I love that. I do too, actually.
It's only the 2009 Pulitzer Prize winner.
Pulitzer.
No big whoop.
None.
They don't do anything.
None.
Yeah. Obama's statements by ruling. This is how much you think they are biased. 78 have been true. 73 are mostly true. 75 are half true. 41 are mostly false. 49 are false. And 4 are pants on fire.
Ooh, pants
on fire.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Do we want to see what Obama's pants on fire?
Yeah, do
been?
The pants on fire ones.
What I have done, and this is unprecedented, is I've said to each agency, look at regulations that are already on the books, and if they don't make sense, let's get rid of them. No.
Is that true?
Didn't say anything.
No, it's not. How about this one? if you actually took the number of Muslim Americans, we'd be one of the largest Muslim countries in the world.
How is that true?
He said that?
Yes.
Oh, man. How would he not know his own people standing in America?
John McCain. This was about John McCain when they were running.
President got
and 100%, John, of your ads, 100% of them have been negative.
Hold on
That's
a second.
A lie.
How does John McCain get into Wedding Crashers, by the way? I want to know how that happened.
I could tell you why. Vince Vaughn's a Republican.
I didn't know. What?
Yes.
I did not know that. Yes. Well, I mean, it makes sense where, from where he's from.
True. And so's Owen Wilson.
Well, Owen Wilson
is? Two for two. There.
A lot of people are that you wouldn't know. Drew Carey is.
Yeah.
Really?
Felicity Huffman is.
Whoa.
Patricia Clarkson is a Republican.
No. But here's, hold the phone. Drew Carey.
See how many white guys with a lot of money aren't Republicans.
Hold the phone. Drew Carey, who's best friends with Sam Simon. I don't think they would agree politically then.
They probably don't.
No.
They probably don't talk politics.
No, but they get along because they're adults.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have many of those.
So you want to read the fourth Obama liar, liar, pants in front?
Yes. This will be good.
No. It's an Obama ad that contends that John McCain endorses Rush Limbaugh's comments about immigration. Limbaugh was not a McCain spokesperson. But,
wow.
I mean, they're pretty, this is a very fair site if people haven't been to it.
Hold on a second.
PolitiFact.
You mean presidents have lied before? Holy cow.
Yeah, but I'm just tired of people like this bonehead sitting here going, sure.
No, you got to call out both sides.
Yeah, look, this is a site that's very neutral.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would not disagree at all, one bit. With that.
And I love how he's saying white guys with money, of course, are Republican. Well, that's true on that side of the coin. And then on the other side of the coin, though, there's a lot of white guys with money that aren't Republican.
Yeah, there's a small town called Los Angeles.
There's a small town called Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
You may be moving there. Oh, you are moving there in a month and a half. Oh, really? Have you announced this yet?
And guess who will have the wings? You'll be called a wasp.
Some people can't download this, I guess. That would be bad for them.
I suppose.
We'll get to news Thursday, then. I don't know if that's going to happen, though, because we have Peter Tolan.
Tolan.
He likes to talk.
Maybe we'll do the news with Peter Tolan.
Maybe. That's a lot of cooks in the kitchen with Bruce Fretz, too.
You're right. A lot of hands in the cookie jar.
I'll promise to shut up. It'll be our best show ever.
This is for Alex Luisi before he goes.
What are you, a dumbass?
Yes, that's true.
Wow.
This is for Steve before we go. This is for Lee before we go.
And nobody likes you.
This is for me before we go.
I know you got it, but... All right, sorry.
Now I see why men love him.
Oh,
and
man. So weird.
This is for the show before we go. Oh, come on.
Oh, boy. What a tough audience in here.
All right. You got to clear your throat on that one.
Yeah. Excuse me.
There you go. You good?
Oh, God. You had that?
Great.
Now, wait a minute. Oh, God.
What?
If you're listening, the soundboard has completely taken over the show.
That's great.
First of all, that's really low of you to put a microphone in Turzo's bathroom.
Oh, no.
Well, I guess you're banned from Turzo's show.
I was going to say, you can kiss goodbye Thursdays and Tuesdays. And since you can't come over Wednesdays, I don't know when you have available.
Yeah. Running out of days.
Oh, yeah, you are. Well, that mouth of yours.
Oh, no, I love it.
And who says take away this soundboard? I think it's great.
I love it. It's great. Best thing you've ever done on this.
Let's do a whole show where we try to talk over this.
That sounds awful.
The joking is the weirdest. Okay.
Can I help you? Oh, you want me to end the show? Oh, Nick's making me end it. What, Nick, why are you forcing me here?
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the audience, though.
I love it. Yeah, what does the audience say? I love it. The person coughing is the best. That's great.
What? Someone's taking a piss in our studio.
No.
What's going on?
Be sure to wash your hands. Wash your hands.
I feel like I'm in a symphony.
The most creepy thing is the heavy breathing. That's the weirdest thing. Like,
what?
People are leaving in droves.
Hey,
all right,
bio.
That's all for tonight.
Oh,
I'll see you after Wednesday's stupid movie thing.
Damn. See you when I see you.
All those damn chalupas.
Is there still snoring going on? I love how all of them ended except they're snoring.
Snoring, it was one guy left.
Wake that person up.
Oh.
What did you do?
Who took in the baby? We gotta go.
Okay.